Hello, Australia. Welcome to This Is Property. Emily Wallace here today with a very special guest. You have requested me to interview an auctioneer because a lot of you have been to auctions. You're curious about auctions. You're buying in Sydney or Melbourne, maybe even Brisbane, and you're a bit overwhelmed by the auction process. I have got a very, very experienced auctioneer today in the studio with us, Greg Bryden from the Ray White Group. He is the number one auctioneer in Victoria for 2023 from the RAIV and back-to-back winner in 2023 and 2024 for Ray White Group, as well as very recently named the number one auctioneer for Apollo Auctions in Australia this year. All that to say, you're in very capable hands when talking about auctions today. Let's get into it.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Greg, welcome to This Is Property.
Thanks so much, Em. Good to see you.
Likewise. And usually when we see each other, it's you calling the auction and maybe me putting my hand up, right?
Spot on. It's usually in the heat of the moment. We don't get too much time to chat. So good to actually unpack auctions, unpack property and have a good talk.
Indeed. So there's a lot of different questions when it comes to auctions. Obviously, it's a method of sale and you're extremely well-versed in auctions because, and I want to touch on your story as well for context for the listeners, but basically, I think people don't understand, it's a profession in itself. You don't necessarily just do auctions because you sell property. You can actually just be purely an auctioneer, right?
Spot on. Melbourne's a little bit different to sort of the northern states. If you look at New South Wales, if you look at Queensland, there's auctioneer registration. So That's a different kettle of fish within itself. And there are a lot of standalone auctioneers in those states. In Melbourne, there are a lot of agents that auction, but there's also some standalone auctioneers that just call auctions every single weekend. So there's definitely a mix.
And so what's your experience been in that to date? You've been just an auctioneer previously as opposed to a listing selling agent?
Yeah, so I've been both. Now I'm back on the tools, if you want to call it that, back listing and selling property and calling auctions, not just my own, but also people in our own office. But previous to that, I was a standalone auctioneer. So we call them contract auctioneers for approximately 6 years. So I've done auctions all over Victoria, all the way from St Andrews through to Werribee, down to Geelong, literally everywhere you can think of.
So at that point in time, were you working with one particular agency or you could work with anybody?
So predominantly with the agency, I was managing an office at that point in time, a real estate office at that point in time. And I would say 80% of the volume I was doing was for that brand. But then outside of that, there are a lot of mainly independent agencies or smaller agencies that didn't have an auctioneer within their office that do need somebody to call auctions when they are, when they're listing those properties. And so that's where I got called in.
Yeah, interesting. And so what sparked you to get into auctioneering specifically?
It's a question that's been asked a lot, and it actually dates back to when I was in work experience. So all the way back to 2006, feels like forever ago, 18 years ago now, I did work experience at a local agency. I live in Bayside in Victoria, and so did a work experience stint there with a gentleman who's very, very well known in the real estate industry and was a leading auctioneer at the time. I could see his adrenaline after an auction on a weekend. I could see how exciting it was and just fell in love with it. Fast forward, I went back there and worked there from 2010 to 2015 in that agency, loved what he did. And then from 2016, 8th of October 2016, I know we both love our numbers, but 8th of October 2016 was the first auction I ever called.
Wow. And how did you feel on the first one?
I had a shaky leg so bad that the person that was penciling for me at the time almost thought that I was going to fall over.
Oh,
I was probably about
goodness.
35, 40 kilos heavier than I am now too, which isn't light, mind you. And so it wasn't the best sight, that's for sure.
Right. And how did you overcome that? Because that would have been pretty scary, right?
Yeah, it's just repetition really. I'm now up to somewhere around 1,200 straight auctions, something like that over the period of time. I'd say more than 10,000 auctions behind the scenes. That's how much we're practicing and evolving. And I'm sure we'll unpack that a little bit later on with competitions, etc. But it's just repetition.
Yeah. Yeah, because it really is like a performance, right? You know, and some people actually go to auction just to watch the auctioneer because it's fun to watch.
Hope they don't come to mind because it's a pretty bad show. But no, you're completely right. For us, it's nobody starts off running, trying to run a marathon by running a marathon. You start off training for a marathon by running 5K and then 6K and then 10K and then 12 and 15 and so on and so forth. Everyone tries to attack auctioneering from day one by doing the entire process. And auction day is only just a very small portion. It's probably 5% of the entire auction process as such. So it's a really interesting space to play in. I'm now lucky enough that I get to help some of the, they call them novices, and coach them through this and really be that mentor to understand everything that happens throughout an auction process.
Yeah, definitely. It's a whole other world that I think a lot of buyers, when they rock up to an auction, don't understand the context of the auctioneer as such. Particularly, you know, as we touched on before, like just because you're a listing and selling agent doesn't mean you're a great auctioneer. There actually can be very different skill sets. And if you're not good with numbers or counting, probably not the best thing to be in either.
Spot on, spot on. And it's a really interesting place to play as well, especially in Victoria. I've done a lot of work with people, especially from Queensland. There's some very, very good mentors that are really at the top of their game for Australasia. And they are standalone auctioneers. To put in context, they're calling 1,300 to 1,500 auctions per year. Do the maths. It's a lot. It's 30 a week they're calling. And that is a dedicated craft for them. It's not something that's by chance. Whereas you come back down to Melbourne and there's some auctioneers and agents that are calling 15 auctions in a year because they're half private sale, half auction. They sell 30 homes a year, which is still a really good number of homes to sell in a year. One in two of them are auction. They then lace up the boots and call one a month. It's the most important part. It's a high-pressure situation, especially if you've got somebody like you across from them that's bidding aggressively and knows the game. If you haven't put in those hours to practice, you're going to get shown up.
Would it be an advantage to a buyer to be bidding on a property with an auctioneer who does only do 10 to 15 a year because they might just want to knock it down?
You would think so, yeah. There's definitely, and again, it goes back to their experience. Some auctioneers are only calling 10 to 15 a year because they've been doing it for 30 years and it's easy. You can pick auctioneers that are a little bit more nervous than most. And again, having worked in both capacities as a contract auctioneer and your own listing, there's different levels of nerves depending on it. Again, I've done enough now that I rock up and I'm pretty cruisy regardless of what auction it is. You've seen me do enough of them. It's a fun environment to be in, but some people make it a not fun environment, a really hesitant environment, something that you can actually see how nervous the auctioneer is. And it makes the buyers more nervous a lot of the time too.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very interesting dynamic, auctioneer and buyers in that situation. Both are nervous for different reasons, obviously. I want to talk about the process of getting to an auction and why a vendor would choose to sell their property at auction. Because for listeners, particularly first home buyers, you know, there's a couple of different methods of sale in real estate. The most common ones are either a private sale, where there's a single asking price and that's the price of the property, and you go forward and make an offer. And if you have to compete with other people, then you do. But then particularly in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, really, auctions are a pretty prominent part of the process. And Ray White as a company actually, one of the key leaders in auctioneering and having auctions as a method of sale, they strongly believe in it. So why would a vendor choose to sell their property via auction?
Really good question, and something that we're really well versed in at the moment because we're in a lot of living rooms talking about auction v private sale. I always preface it to a vendor that you're going to get a biased opinion from me, and obviously prior, I hope they know that what we've done in the auction space before that. But for me, auction is the only method of sale that incorporates auction, private sale, and expressions of interest, if you want to call it that, which is another method of sale in that entire process. A private sale can't be an auction, but an auction can be a private sale. Private sales for me are top-down selling processes. You start typically up here, you start at a really high level, and you're working your way down until you hit a price that a buyer is happy to work with. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's very rare that a private sale would sell for far in excess of the exact number that you put on the property.
Exactly, yeah.
Auctions are the exact opposite. They're a bottom-up selling process. You're typically setting a floor at which the vendors are willing to work with within reason. And I'm sure we're going to unpack reserve prices and all of that sort of fun stuff to talk to first home buyers about. But realistically, it's a bottom-up selling process. You're usually exceeding the vendor's expectations in that regard. And if you're not, you've got the ability to negotiate and form a private sale after the auction process. Data, again, you talk about Ray White. We call ourselves the competition creators. If you follow us, really good data sets out of Melbourne. Private sales in Melbourne at the moment are taking anywhere from 7 to 8 weeks to sell. Auctions are 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah. And I mean, that also comes back to the campaign, right? As in, for those who don't know, an auction campaign, typically 3.5 to 4 weeks is kind of, the fourth Saturday is the auction that happens. And typically, even if it doesn't sell in that auction scenario itself, it's probably sold by the Monday or Tuesday. It's within a 4 week period. It's
only if you're helping buyers, usually. It's, yeah. sometimes they do linger on, but it's really vendors' motivations to sell. And you're exactly right. It's somewhere in that 24 to 28 day period is typically where we're selling our auctions. And if you look at predominant auction agents on realestate.com, we've all got stats now for the average days on market. Any auction agents are sitting anywhere from 24 to 28 days on market. The other advantage for a vendor is the unconditional side of things. Private salesmen, especially in this environment, I know what banking's like at the moment. Pre-approvals are taking longer. Finance clauses are taking longer. Yes. All of these things are playing into longer times on market. An auction sale is an unconditional sale. There is no subject to finance, building and pest, cooling off period, nothing like that. When it's done, when that ink is dry or digital ink is dry, it's sold.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, being on my side of the fence, I have buyers who are nervous about that because being unconditional means it is what it is on the day. So you have to invest in due diligence upfront, namely building a pest inspection, which I know people have a gripe with that of having to pay for something before they know they've got an outcome. But also somewhat of a risk in finance. Yes, you have pre-approval, but you have to make sure the bank values the property at the price you've paid. However, and I've had quite a few conversations with mortgage brokers and the banks directly around their process for valuing properties that go to auction. A majority of the time, it will actually just be the contract price is the valuation. So if it was, no matter what it was quoted, say it was 8,850 and it sold for 920, 70K over the top end of the range, but the most recent bidder was at 915, that's the market. You paid 920, you can't value it to a specific dollar.
Sounds a bit nerdy, but five of my best mates are all property valuers. So I hang in kind of nerdy circles, but we have this discussion all the time, and there's going to be the odd outlier that they go, no, that's not market price. But typically, and again, it's based on risk factors. So all properties have risk factors. It's rated 1 to 5, whether you're on main roads, near airports, have easements, all of that sort of stuff. If there's asbestos in the property, et cetera, that they can see from an external point of view, or if there's been a drastic uplift in price in the course of the last 2 to 3 years, say that one that you were talking about, 8,850 sold for 920, it was purchased for 600 2 years ago. And there was no improvements, the banks might go, oh, something's a bit off here. What's happened? Most of the time, if you're a risk rating of 1, 2, or 3, it's straight through contract price. If you're a 4 or a 5 for main roads, et cetera, they might have something to say about it.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a level of confidence. Also, for those listening, if you have got a property in mind that's going to auction and you've got a broker on board, submit the address to them before the auction, just so they're aware of what you're bidding on. They can let you know if it is near power lines and they've got concerns about it or what rating that might come back as. They can't give you an exact figure as to what it will be valued at because that's actually determined within the auction itself. But just to be aware that you can sort of do some due diligence in finance before you go to auction.
And we talk to a heap of our vendors at the moment, the buyers are the smartest that they've ever been. They've got access to the most amount of information possible. There's a website called property.com.au that tells you a whole lot of things about whether you've got overlays, what's nearby, what's in that close proximity, etc., what your recent sales are, and it gives you objective information, not subjective information. Because if you love a property, you're always going to think it might be worth a little bit more than what it is. That will give you objective information. You've got things like Price Finder, RP Data, you've got everything else available to you as a buyer to really work out what a property is worth. The fun part is real estate's not logical.
No, it's not. It's no
never
science.
Has been, never will be. It's emotional. No. And so a property's worth what somebody's willing to pay for it.
Yeah, I've heard that many a time.
It's the good old real estate yarn, isn't it?
It's also, I guess, that balance of supply and demand. And obviously, the thing I personally love about auctions is you can see people in front of you who's bidding at what level for that type of property and what your competition actually is, as opposed to a private sale where it's quite questionable how many offers are actually on the table. It's not transparent. The buyer really has no idea if they're being played or not. And I hear that from buyers a lot. Like, we just don't know, is the real estate agent taking us for a ride, or are they being legitimate when they say there's 4 other offers on the table?
And I was actually having a discussion with a vendor of mine last night that I'm helping purchase at the moment. And the way that the agent interacted, they put an offer in on a property. We unpacked what the offer process for that agent looked like. Now, this is in my area where I'm listing and selling. I know the agent very well. I've known him for years. And the way that that was gone through with them was just, it was mind-blowing to me. Nothing in writing, all verbal offers, went back to the vendor, then lied about how many people came through the open for inspection last night because he didn't know that the purchaser or the prospective purchaser's mother had gone to the inspection because they had different last names. And the transparency around real estate, it makes us all look bad. I get it. Like, I have no issues with buyers not trusting us as agents. Yeah. There are the 5% that make the 95% look bad, but the 5% are the only ones that people talk about and hear about. And so the transparency around auction is my favourite thing around auction because I can look every single person that's involved in that transaction, buyers, underbidders, vendors, my agents, everything like that in the face and go, well, it is what it is. That was what it was. That's what happened on the day. That is the market price for the property today. If you like it, let's take it. If you don't, let's not. But there's no questions around, was there more left on the table? Was the agent being transparent? What happened? Everyone's on a level playing field.
Yeah. I agree. And it's interesting because a lot of the calls I do, and I know John, who co-hosts with me typically as well, he gets similar ones, people saying that they don't want to go to auction. I don't want to buy a property at auction. And I ask, well, why? Oh, it's scary. It's intimidating. Things always go over. I can't afford the property if it goes to auction. And it's an interesting concept because I always say, well, that's outside of an off-market exclusive access sale, which is my favourite, obviously.
That's where you make your money.
Well, it's where
you add your value, I should say, not make your money.
It's where it makes sense that we just know the price is the price, you know, and it's my job to assess whether it's worth that. That's another kettle of fish. But outside of that, buying an auction really is my favourite way, or a boardroom auction, you know, some sort of form of transparency because I can see the other buyers. It baffles me when people say, I don't want to bid at auction. I want to be part of the auction. It's like, but that's actually, it's a good thing.
So you want to transact behind closed doors, not really trusting the agent, knowing what's happening, not knowing if you're bidding against another bidder or just bidding against the vendor and the agent making things up. I completely agree with you. Transparency is my favourite part. This market that we're in at the moment, especially in Victoria, I was running auction training this morning and I said, there was a question from the team that said, what's a good auction? How many bidders is a good auction? I said, at the moment, three bidders is a great auction. Two bidders is a good auction. One bidder is a normal auction. At the moment, that's what we're finding. We had 16 auctions as an office last week. We sold five under the hammer with multiple competition, five out of 16. That leaves 11 left. We had seven that were one-bidder auctions that either had a live negotiation or passed in.
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting.
For me, it's allowing vendors and buyers to transact in an open experience and know that that was the price on the day.
Definitely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask the question that everyone's waiting for me to ask, which is around quote ranges versus reserve price versus sold price. And, you know, I'm very passionate about this, so we'll get into it in just a moment.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click get help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So, for those who don't know, and we'll start with Melbourne because it's the easiest way to start and we'll touch on Sydney, but more generally, if a property is going to auction, it has a quote range. The quote range probably looks something like, let's go with the 8-day 50 example, right?
Yep.
Can you talk us through how a quote range can then translate to a vendor's reserve price not being in that quote range and then potentially a selling price being miles beyond that? Like, how does that situation actually occur?
It's the age-old question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Give somebody some restrictions around what they can and can't do, being real estate agents with pricing, and you'll find a loophole. The loophole is, and it's the one that is talked about but nobody really understands how it happens, a reserve price for a property is never set with us until auction day. Some people set it 72 hours before, 48 hours before, 24 hours before. Legally, the law says as soon as that reserve price is set, your pricing to market must change to reflect that reserve price within 24 hours of that being signed off. The loophole that we play with, for positive and for negative, is that we sign it off on auction day, 5 minutes before we walk out to call the auction.
You couldn't possibly change the quote range.
Couldn't change the quote range, not allowed to. Well, you're allowed to. You physically couldn't actually get to do it. Can't go on RP data, make a new statement of information, et cetera.
Yeah.
The difficulty I have with And again, I've been on both sides of this. I've bought property, I've sold property, I've auctioned property for contract auctioneers, I've auctioned property as a listing and selling agent. There is a push from a gentleman that lives out in the hills in Victoria to disclose reserve prices at the start of a campaign. As somebody that's been involved in this for almost 15 years, if you got us to write down the reserve price at the start of a campaign and what it ended up being on auction day, I would say 99.9% of the time it's different.
Yeah. As in the vendors want more than it's worth?
More or less. More or less. A lot of the time the reserve prices start higher at the start of the campaign and end up being lower on auction day.
You get the feedback and they adjust. It's kind of the reverse of my buyers who want their McMansion for very cheap and you have to work out that they actually can't afford what they're looking at.
Yeah. I want to pay $8 to $850 for a four-bedroom, two-bathroom house in Northcote on 400 square metres. Awesome. Good luck. I sold one in 1992.
Yeah.
But realistically, it is the agent's job to educate the vendors on two factors. One, what the recent sales have been, to draw a comparative price for their home. Number two, what buyers are willing to pay for the home, because sometimes they're not the same thing due to a number of factors. And again, we've had discussions multiple times around properties that have been advertised at $8 to $850. The reserve was $850, $860, $870, somewhere towards the top end of the range. And it sells for $1,020,000. And you're like, huh? That's the product of two, three, four people loving the home, being scarcity in the marketplace and being able to afford it. The frustration, I think, and we've had this discussion again multiple times, is when it's a quote of $8 to $850, you've had buyers that have been involved, that have gone and got building and pest inspections and spent some money, contributed time. Time is the biggest factor in people's lives. A lot of the time money is disposable, time not so much. You've gone back three or four times, you brought your parents through, et cetera, and you get to auction day and the bidding gets to $902 and it's not on the market.
Still not on the market, yeah.
That is miscare typically by the agents. It may also be miscare by the vendors, but a lot of the time it's miscare by the agents for not adjusting price ranges based on what they think and know that the vendor's price is going to be.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that's probably the biggest challenge is that a lot of people, well, certainly that I deal with, but listeners of the show more generally, are first-time buyers. They've actually not gone through the process of selling a home before. So understanding how you make the decision on the reserve price and the feedback that the agent's giving and their advice and those conversations that happen an hour before the auction, before you decide the reserve, play a lot into, you know, the number that actually comes out at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's the honesty piece. Everyone says, and I make this joke all the time, even during auctions, I say everyone says don't trust a real estate agent, but at the same time it is a two-way street. We're only as good, and this is why we love working with buyer's advocates, because you actually get an honest and a trusting opinion back and forth and you can actually have a real conversation about it. A lot of the time, and I run this example all the time, we've got a buyer that we're quoting one to $1.1 million. We've got a buyer and I say, if this isn't the home for you, what budget are you shopping up to? And they say, 1.1, that's all I can afford. That's why I'm shopping for this home. I'm like, great, awesome, thanks. We'll record that down. We get to auction day. They pay $1.22 million for it. And you're like, you didn't really help yourself. I get that you don't want to give away all the information. Keep your cards close to your chest. I get it. But at the same time, the dialogue that you have with agents can really actually help you as the buyer to establish a level of value that you can try and transact the home in. The agent's job is to get the home sold. That's what they're employed to do. We're not employed to make buyers feel good or vendors feel good. We're employed to get the home sold. I say nobody likes real estate agents. They only come to us when they need us.
Yeah.
But that's what they're to do, get the home sold.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think the equation in all of this and why the market, you know, obviously becomes buyer's market versus seller's market is around the supply and demand fundamentals, which is why, as you touched on that example before, when things sell well over because there's three or four emotional bidders in the piece, I see these crazy results that no one can really comprehend. And that's when they start to, the default is to blame the agent. Oh, the agent quoted $850. But what you need to be looking at is, hey, this is a competitive property for which other buyers also wanted to buy and we're willing to pay a premium for it. So what can I do differently or where should I be looking differently or does my money actually buy me what I want now?
And everyone focuses on the big results and it's only natural. It's a little bit like, it's a bit like Instagram. We're both on Instagram all the time. It's a highlight reel.
Oh, totally.
It's not real life.
Yeah.
You don't put on Instagram when you're eating breakfast in the morning. Well, some people do, not me. But you don't go, unless you're doing a day in the life of. But realistically, you don't go and post that sort of stuff. So there's no real results that agents post all the time about sold $5,000 over reserve. You only ever hear about the results that are 100, 200 grand above reserve, 10, 20% above reserve. And so the ones that get publicized are the ones that actually make us look bad as agents, which is kind of a counterintuitive way of marketing ourselves, because we think we're appealing to vendors, but realistically there's more buyers in a marketplace than there are vendors.
Yeah.
And so you're actually pissing off more people than you are helping more people.
Yeah.
And there's also the lag time between a vendor sees a result. So run this example. We've had a four-week auction campaign. They see it quoted $8 to $8.50. It sells for $1.02 million. The vendor sees that result. The next vendor, this is, not the one that's just sold. They then go, okay, I'm going to sell my home. They then go and interview agents. Takes a week. They then appoint an agent. Takes another couple of days. They then go and get trades done, styling done, et cetera. That takes another 7 days. So we're already at 15, 20 days in. They then run a four-week auction campaign. The market's changed. The market doesn't change in quarter cycles. The market changes in week cycles, especially in major cities. Maybe in country and rural areas it's different, but in major cities, we talk about clearance rates on a weekly basis. We don't talk about quarterly clearance rates, do we? And everyone sees a clearance rate at 72, 78% for Melbourne. I think that's been most of the recent ones. If you actually look at Wednesday afternoon, that's when the real clearance rate comes
out. Yes, and when the data's actually.
58.5% it was last week. The one on Saturday afternoon, again, the highlight reel, agents report results that make them look good.
Yeah. They don't post for the crappy ones.
They don't pass passing results, do they? And so on Wednesday afternoon, you actually see that 58.5% of homes have sold at auction. That means 41.5% haven't by Wednesday. And so when I'm talking with a vendor about their reserve price, I say, hey, I'm having this conversation with 2 out of every 5 vendors. Mm. Don't be alarmed.
And I think that just goes to show it is a metric that listeners can look to as well, is the Saturday one is not the actual real life.
It's the highlight result.
Everybody getting in with their really good results that they're celebrating and missing the other four that weren't any good.
Maybe it'll help the listeners. So some people want to ask, how do we get those clearance rate results? As an agent, we get phone calls, repetitive phone calls, both from the institute of each state, but from the publications, Domain, realestate.com, to ask how the auction went. Do you really reckon you're going to take a phone call if you've just had one that passed in, you're pretty annoyed with the vendor because they didn't listen to your feedback, there was no buyers that turned up? You're going to take the phone call from the thing that rings on your phone that says, REIV sales Order. Results?
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
No.
I don't want to tell people I had a crap day.
Yeah.
But if you've just sold one for 100 grand over, guess what? You're probably going to answer and go, hey, I just sold one for 100 grand over.
Oh, real estate. It's a fun life, isn't it?
It is. It's an emotional roller coaster. And having bought and sold, and I know that you've bought and sold both as an investor, not as a live-in side of things, but it's really interesting to ride that emotional roller coaster and go through that process to understand what it feels like missing out on a home. Because a lot of the time agents are insulated from it. They haven't gone through it, or they've done it once or twice. If you're doing it repetitively, and again, it's not for everyone. I'm not saying you need to go out and buy and sell a million homes, but it's a hard position to be in. And that's why they employ people like you, so that it takes a little bit of that pressure off. Yes, you still get your hopes up, but it's emotional.
Yeah, big time. There's two topics I want to touch on with you. Number one is underquoting and establishing the difference between the definition of underquoting versus the vendor's reserve being outside the quote range. People get very confused by this, and I want to clear it up because they're two different things.
Spot on.
Underquoting relies on the agent, as in the quote needs to come from the agent's advice.
Yep.
And if it's underquoted, that's on the agent. If the vendor's reserve is over their quoted range, that's on the vendor's decision as to what they want to sell their home for, with the guidance of an agent, but ultimately it's their decision as to what price they sell their home for. Let's chat about underquoting. So the definition of underquoting is effectively marketing a property for less than what the market value of it is based on recent sales. It's 3 sales in the past 6 months within a 2 kilometre radius is the Victorian one. And
again, give agents restrictions on what they can and can't do, and they'll find a loophole. So there's always ways to get around it. But at the end of the day, you need to get both buyers and vendors in a position to be able to sell. That's our job as agents. And by underquoting, it typically doesn't do that. So we definitely shy away from it. It's not something that we do.
Why would an agent underquote? What's the benefit of underquoting?
To get buyers through the door, to get as many price opinions as they can to make themselves feel good and look like a rock star because they've got 300 people at their auction. It does work sometimes, don't get me wrong. It works in the way that you get competition for a property, and competition breeds price. I was having a great conversation with a vendor the other day, and they said, oh, this agent's recommended a private sale to us. And I said, great, why? And they said, well, if you get into a multi-offer situation, it usually drives the price up and we sell for a really good number. And I said, sounds a lot like an auction. That's what an auction is competition against price. So agents do it to get more buyers through the door, typically. And again, buyers are educated, but at the same time, they will also listen to what they've been told. So if the price online says X, they go, oh, really? I can buy it at that price? And it's really disheartening when it then sells. It's more disheartening when it passes in for a lot over that number. Yes. If it sells for a lot over that number, and this is, I guess, what we're going to unpack, is the difference between a property selling for way more than it should based on competition, or a property selling for way more than it should based on reserve. Yes. And that's a really tricky part to unpack. We had one recently just in our little area. We'd sold one three doors up from a property. So we sold a property for $1.7 million, four-bedroom, two-bathroom home, needed some love. Another agency listed one three doors across, same street. Quoted at $1.65 to $1.75 million. The home is, at least in my opinion, was $300,000 better than our home. Renovated, five bedroom, three bathroom, stunning, landscaped everything, Tudor looking home. It was immaculate. Went to auction on the weekend, wasn't on the market at $2 million, sold for $2.15 with a quote of $1.65 to $1.75 million.
And it wasn't on the market at $2
million. Nope.
Oh my goodness. So $300K over.
$300,000. And this is what gives us a bad name.
Oh my goodness.
And I get the frustration.
So, and that is an underquote.
That is the definition for me. More so relating back to the original sale.
Yes.
That was the definition of underquoting.
Yeah, regardless of the reserve price, regardless of it not being on the market at $2,050,000, it shouldn't have been quoted as light as it was in the first place.
Correct.
Yeah. I find it very easy to pick underquoting in apartments. So a lot of first-time buyers do buy apartments, and there's obviously recent sales in the block. And when you've got a like-for-like product, it's so easy to pick out when someone is quoting way too light, particularly when the floor plans are very similar, the internal footprint's very similar, the variations might be on the aspect, maybe front of the block, back of the block, north versus south, that sort of thing. But we're talking a couple of $1,000s here and there on those values, not, you know, 10, 20, 30K really.
100%. And the interesting part on that is, to do the flip side on that, I completely agree with you on that. And that's where you play a lot in that space. And we've got a lot of apartment buildings around where we are too, that in that same building. But buyers can also be misled on the other side of things when you're in a building that's three doors down, that has a completely different body corporate fee, has issues with the body corporate, with the cladding, et cetera, has a pool and a gym and a spa and lifts, whereas the other one didn't. And so it's real difficult to actually navigate that system to go, well, this sold for this, so why is this worth $150,000 more or $150,000 less? But it's so tricky.
If, hypothetically, if a buyer came through one of your properties and they thought that the price was too light based on they'd been in the market for a handful of months, they walked through the property, it was a really busy open, and they thought, wow, like this quote seems way too light compared to what I've seen. What would you like them to do? What would be the best case scenario if they felt that way?
It really depends on if they're in a position to actually buy the home or not. Because a lot of people have opinions. Yes. Everyone has an opinion, and everyone's entitled to an opinion. We get a lot of people that do come through homes and go, oh, this is so underquoted. I can't believe it. This has got to be worth at least $200,000 more. Turns out they're a neighbor from around the corner that thinks that this area is the Taj Mahal, it's the best home ever. And I say to them, so thanks so much for that feedback. I really appreciate it. Obviously, the vendors would love as much as they can get for the home. Are you in a position where you'd be able to make an offer for the property at that level? Typically, it's no.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's, if somebody's genuinely willing to buy the home at that level, we will, of course, treat with them and move forward. I know my numbers extremely well. My team sell 42% of their homes. So it's me and two others sell 42% of our homes pre-auction. Because we quote our homes realistically, we end up with one, maybe two buyers, and then it puts us in a position where the vendors and the buyers are willing to treat before auction. It's using the auction process. But it's really tricky if buyers are saying, yeah, it's definitely underquoted, it's worth 100 grand more. It turns out they don't actually have the ability or desire to purchase the home.
Yeah. If they did, is that what you get them to do, document an offer?
100%. Yeah. And it depends on the timing throughout the campaign too. So I always say price has got to come with context. In an off-market scenario, and what you specialise in, that pre-market, whatever you want to call it, that's a really tricky space to play in, because you're giving a vendor one offer,
yes,
and asking them to sell the home on that one offer.
Yeah, which is a challenge.
It's a challenge because everyone always goes, well, what if there's more on the table? What if we have three or four or five buyers through? And you've got to get vendors and buyers at the right time in the right position to transact. I say in living rooms, it's 1 out of 20. One out of 20 homes that we do this with actually works. So that's the really tricky part. But I always say to any campaign that we're running, we run the first Saturday open for inspection. We run a midweek inspection. We run a second Saturday inspection. And then I have diarised, my team books it in advance, we have a mid-campaign meeting after two Saturday inspections. It allows the ability for the vendors to have seen 10 days worth of data plus just before they launch. So it's about 12 days worth of data, and not have the excuse that somebody was away that weekend. they went away on school holidays, they went away on a trip. If you're not there, you may not be a buyer in that period of time. And so that gives them context that we might have had 10, 15, 20, 25 groups through the campaign at that stage. You've had that amount of opinions on the home for value. It then gives them context that your offer as a buyer is actually good. Whereas if they get one offer from one buyer, they have no context to understand if that's good or not. I'm not a runner at all, but I'll give you the scenario that if you went out for your first ever run and you ran an 8-minute kilometer, you probably think you're okay. You're like, cool, I got out there. Then you hop on Instagram and you hop on a running page and they're running 4-minute Ks. Yeah. And you're like, oh,
not so great.
I gotta get a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
A vendor doesn't understand what price is good until they have context.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Question for you. How do you handle, because again, I have opinions on this, how do you handle
We've all got opinions. A
pre-auction offer? If someone comes in, let's say the property's quoted 950 to a mil and they offer a million 25, vendor's happy with that based on the evidence of the number of people through the opens, recent sales, your advice. We're on the market at a million 25 and selling unless there's a better offer. What do you do then?
Biggest bugbear for buyers in the marketplace at the moment. I will preface it by saying that because there's no guidance. And real estate offices and real estate agents vary in size, vary in experience, vary in who they can actually bounce things off. I'm extremely lucky that we're in a high performance environment. I'm in the number 2 office in Victoria. We've got incredible agents that we can bounce these things off. Some agents are not in that case. Some agents sell 10 homes a year. And so they get an auction and they get an offer pre-auction and they don't know what to do with it. They don't know what the real process or the right process is. And is there a right process? I still don't believe that there's a right process. It's your process. What we would do, we would get your offer in writing. We were just discussing before about verbal offers. Verbal offers are not worth anything because a vendor can't sign it. They can't sign your word. They can only sign on a piece of paper. So it has to be documented in writing. And there's a lot of hesitations from buyers around putting something in writing. They want to know that the offer is going to get accepted before they put it in writing. My advice, strong advice, is put your best foot forward. Put that offer in writing. From there, we have a very strict policy that we text every single person that's come through that campaign and call the parties that have made sure that we know that they're interested. Everyone text, hot parties called. From there, we usually set a 24-hour time limit. If it happens to be on a Saturday, I will give that until Monday p.m., Monday 5 p.m. maybe, depending on the day, private, public holidays, et cetera, et cetera. Minimum 24 hours. It then allows the option for a boardroom auction. If you have more, if there's more than one person that texts back yes, ends up as a boardroom auction, or bring the auction date forward to the next Saturday. Say this happens on a Thursday night, I'd just say do it on the Saturday. Move it forward to the Saturday. If you've got one other party, I then let them know that there's obviously been an offer made on the property. The property is about to sell. Do you have interest in the property? The part that annoys buyers the most is, well, tell me what the offer is. We don't disclose offers. Some agents do disclose offers. I will try and guide buyers as best as I can by saying it's above the range, it's in the middle of the range, it's below the range, whatever it is, to give people an idea. But again, I work for the vendor. Sounds bad, but I work for the vendor and my job is to get the best possible price. If I told you the offer is a million and 25, you're going to give me a million and 26 or a million and 25, 500. If I say the offer's above the range and it's really attractive, you might say, well, what about a million and 40?
Yeah. So that case scenario is when there's only 2 people.
Correct.
But otherwise it's a boardroom auction and the boardroom auction opens with the opening bid being a million and 25 a party.
Yep. And I'm just very clear. I said a million and 25, guys, the property's on the market. Anything north of this buys it. At a million and 25, the vendors are giving me clear instructions that the home is transacting today. It's selling. The keys are on the table.
Yeah. And then people just can be what they want, really. It's on the market, so it'll be whatever they want from there. Do you suggest a rise?
I always do.
Yeah.
50 grand. No, yeah. 10 grand typically. But again, it depends on the price scenario. I will take anything. We've taken dollar bids before if we need to keep things moving because my focus is not on the next bid. It's on how much I can close out the next person.
Of course. And so the boardroom auction, just to clarify, is that on Zoom, in person, in a boardroom,
we try
on site?
And allow it open to absolutely every single scenario possible. I always prefer people being in person. More from the selfish side that people are more emotional when they're in the room. Sounds bad. But if you're on Zoom, I bought my last property on Zoom. It was the weirdest experience ever in the middle of COVID. And so I bought it on Zoom. There was no emotional connection to it. I knew I was buying it. So I already had a glass of champagne in my hand. I did the old egotistical thing of being on the screen with the champagne, just being like, I'm buying this thing. Like, get out of here. Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
So yeah, open it up to everyone in person, Zoom, phone call, whatever you need to be.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, just to close out, I do have a question from Glenn, now, I'm not sure if you know Glenn, but Glenn James actually is the reason this podcast exists.
I do know Glenn. not personally, but I know of Glenn.
So Glenn said, I would love to know from them the art of the auctioneer. Can they really extract a premium price from the group of people, or would an eBay-style digital auction still get the same result? Is it the razzle-dazzle in the real life that does it? And he's keen to know, like, what the tactics are. So it's interesting because there are some auction platforms out there, right, where you can bid just like an eBay-style auction.
Yeah, and there's some that I'm sure in the north you probably experience it more than we do in sunny little Bayside. We're a little bit archaic in our part of the world that we love street auctions, and they're always on Saturdays. If you go to many, many parts of Victoria, especially New South Wales and Queensland, there's in-room auctions. There's Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. in-room auctions. If you go to New Zealand, they're 98% in-room auctions. So the art of the street auction is very, very Melbourne-based. Does the auction platforms work? Yes, I'm sure they transact. For me, having both called contract auctions and listing and selling auctions, me knowing the intricate details of why a buyer wants to buy the home is what allows me to draw more money out of them. Are you buying it because you grew up on the street? Are you buying it because your mum lives two streets away? Are you buying it because it's got a northeast aspect and you've been looking for it for forever and it's got the glass that you want, et cetera? Or are you just buying it because it serves a purpose? If I know the emotional triggers for why you're buying it, you're like putty. Sounds bad, but you're like putty in somebody's hand. You know that they desire it. And so say, for instance, somebody gives me $1,000 more, the other bidder, I'm going back to you for 10. I'm not going back to you for $1,000, and I will just demand that $10,000 until I get it out of you. I won't take your $1,000. You offer me $1,000. I go, guys, go something a little bit stronger. You know you want the home. You've missed out on the last 3, 4, 5. Get your weekends back. No more realestate.com. You're going to spend it on tires driving to the next property.
Yeah. FYI, buyers, you can just say you want $1,000.
Sorry. You can definitely say.
This is where we come on go, both sides of the fence here.
Go for $1,000. Yeah. But the emotional tells for Glenn, yes, it would get a great result. It would probably still get a similar result. But it's the ability to make decisions in a short period of time under pressure and under emotion is what drives auction prices. There are that many people. I always say this. Buyers have three prices in mind. So do vendors. There's a price that you want to pay as a buyer, which is your bottom price. That's like, I got it for a steal, going on the gram. This is awesome. There's a, oh, I had a bit of competition today. We bought the home. We're really, really happy, but we kind of stretched ourselves a little bit. And then there's your budget. For vendors, there's the opposite, and I work top down for the vendors. There's champagne price, which is we're doing backflips. This is great. There's the price that you go, yeah, okay, we sold okay, like it was fine. We had a couple of bidders and it was just the market price. And then there's what I call the vomit price, which is a price that you should be physically ill saying, and that should be your reserve price. Our job as agents is to get the two middle prices to match, and that's the best scenario. Buyers are happy, vendors are happy, agents are happy. Everyone in the transaction's happy. That's what makes the world go round. By seeing buyers distraught because they paid too much and vendors doing backflips and champagne and shouting inside might give you a thrill for 5 minutes. But at the end of the day, and when you get home and you see your family and you're like, it's actually not the best feeling ever. It's really not. If you're dialed in on that side of things, if you care for both sides, it's not the best feeling ever.
Yeah, because the buyer's just paid an arm and a leg.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, they're going to have to sell at some point.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to go and get it back for them. Great.
Makes your life very hard.
Exactly.
Well, look, it's been a blast having a chat to you. It's nice just to chat with an industry colleague about the nature of auctions, and it's always a hot topic. We haven't done an auction episode for quite some time, and we are about to head into a pretty solid auction season, really. April, May, June, I think it's going to be fairly strong.
Spot on. Take away Easter this weekend, and then following Easter, 4th, 11th, 18th, 25th of May, I think my office total might have close to 90 auctions booked for those 4 weekends, which is just
in advance, which
incredible.
Is insane. Yep. So, it's going to be a busy time out there. I hope that today's episode's given you some insight, especially some context around underquoting versus vendor's reserve and quote ranges and those sorts of things, because that pops up a lot in the Facebook group. If you're not a member of the Facebook group, it's This Is Money. Go and check it out. Request to join. I don't think you have to jump through any hoops to get there. Just ask to join.
And just join the Glenn fan club.
That's it. Literally Glenn fan club. And if you have any specific questions for the property show, just add hashtag property and John or I, most likely I, will find the question and ask it on the next episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having
me.
Appreciate
all your insights and best of luck with any future competitions you have. You're killing it, smashing it.
2.5 weeks away from the Victorians. So we'll see how we go.
Yeah.
Back to back would be nice.
I love that it's actually like a sport. I want to come and watch. Can you watch? Can you spectate?
Yeah, you can definitely come. REIV, 16th, 17th of April. I was trying to explain to people what it's like. It's like, thank God you're here.
Okay.
And I'm the person, I'm the comedian that gets walked in. I got no idea what's going on and I've got to figure out the script.
Okay. Love that. So even if you're a bit of a fan of auctions or even interested in what actually happens in those competitions, go and check it out. We'll put a link in the show notes below. But until next week, have a great week ahead and thanks for listening to the show.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. It's time to get the property you want. If buying your first home or investing in property is something you're interested in, check out John Pidgeon's book, Sort Your Property Out and Build Your Future. John covers the essentials like how to find hotspots and not spots, due diligence, mortgages, tax stuff, grants and schemes, and how to set up your investing timeline. It's the only book you'll need about buying and investing in property. Visit sortyourpropertyout.com to grab your copy. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of MoneySherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.